Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. I'm joined by Mr. Philip Haney. He's a former Department of Homeland Security officer, and Congress has designated him as a whistleblower. What'd you expose, Phil?
Well, during the Obama administration, during most of the time I was in active duty, I put information into the law enforcement database, we call it derogatory information, connecting the dots on two major groups, the Muslim Brotherhood, which a lot of us have heard about, and another group called Tablighi Jamaat that comes from the continent of India, on counterterrorism and terrorism-related information. And bottom line is the administration deleted the information out of the system. And my premise has been, and I can prove it quite well, that it was very plausibly could have prevented either Boston bombing, the San Bernardino shootings, and or the Orlando shootings, just as three examples.
We know there were some big holes in what happened in Florida recently. What went wrong there?
Kind of the same thing. Let's start with the FBI, with getting calls in from people that were concerned about Cruz's behavior. It was alarming the way he was behaving. So they call the FBI, see something, say something. And then we find out as time goes on after the attack in Parkland that they never followed up on the calls that people made. Now, where did that come from? Are they too busy? Did they decide it wasn't important enough to follow up? We also found out that he had posted YouTube and that they never either didn't try or were incapable of going back and finding the author of the YouTube video. And so this is the FBI. This is not supposed to be an amateur organization. Anybody with tech savvy could find out who the author of that YouTube video was. And anybody at a local police or welfare services could have or should have followed up on those call-in concerns. But we found out that they didn't follow up on it. It's kind of the same thing that happened when I was active duty at the federal level. We put information in the system. We connected the dots. We tied the networks together. And the U.S. government chose to do one of three things consistently. Either simply ignore it, hope it'll just go away, because it happens to contradict the prevailing policy, or take one step further and eliminate it. Remove the information from the system, which is a whole nother level of deliberate and intentional involvement, or third, go after the person that put the information in the system in the first place.
And your critics would say that your story is full of holes. How do you respond to that?
Well, what I would say is if my story is full of holes, that I'm not the one that put them there, because the information is watertight. And for example, it's kind of a surreal situation. If I only had one side of the equation to support my case, I wouldn't blame people for doubting or being tempted to doubt me. But I have another side of the equation, and it has the commendation letters that I receive from my own agency and even from FBI and or the JTTF, the Joint Terrorism Task Force. In one case, giving me credit for finding 300 terrorists. I was also giving awards, performance awards, during the course of my career, 10 of them. And in one case, here's where it really gets strange. I was investigated for the very same case that I received the largest cash award in my entire career, for the same case.
Well, let me ask you, has political ideology infiltrated our security apparatus? Obviously, it has, in your opinion, but just how prevalent is it, and is that being fixed under the Trump administration?
There are hopeful signs, yes, that the first thing you have to happen is to recognize that there even is something wrong before you can ever start addressing it. At least we're starting to see indicators now that the Trump administration recognizes there's some major breakdowns in our national security, because this is a part of national security. And I talk a lot about sovereignty, because sovereignty is our right to choose a form of government that we will live under. But it also includes the safeguards, the protections, the walls, though I don't just mean physical walls, the legal walls, the cultural walls. That's why it's a government of, for, and by the people. So let's start at the national level with the actual border. How well are we securing our border? How well have we been securing our border? Not too good. Lots of room for improvement. Then let's take it to Parkland School. How well was Parkland being secured? If you go into public buildings in Washington, D.C., virtually all of them, you have to go through a detector and a screening. Same with the airports. Are our kids less valuable, less important? How difficult would it be to put what we call a first line of defense at a school? Not that difficult.
What are the roadblocks? Why isn't that happening?
I wish I could answer that question, because it has to do with worldview and ideology. We also often call it political correctness. But it's what I also call a blind spot. It's like driving on the interstate with an obvious known blind spot in your mirror. What's inevitably going to happen if you refuse to acknowledge that there's a blind spot in your mirror? You're going to hit somebody, or somebody's going to hit you. And at that point, when that accident happens, will you be able to honestly say you didn't know? No. You should know when you're driving that there's a blind spot and remedy it. So what are the blind spots? Again, it goes back to sovereignty, recognizing the importance of protecting our national security, which includes our schools. The Constitution specifically says that the federal government's, one of its primary responsibilities, is to prevent outbreaks of domestic violence in the states. This would come under that category, wouldn't it? So if we're not doing our utmost to prevent them, am I saying that we will prevent all possible forms of terrorism or domestic violence attacks? No. But that's not exactly the point. People are upset because they recognize that the local police didn't respond to the threat, that the FBI didn't respond to the threat, that welfare services didn't respond to the threat, and that the sheriff's office, when they went to visit Mr. Cruz some 20 or 30 times, failed to respond to the threat. The American people intuitively know that they didn't do all that they could do. If we did all that we could do and an attack still happens, it's a tragedy. But we don't have to have the additional burden, sorrow, of realizing that it is actually possible that we could have prevented it. And it's the same in the arena that I operated in counterterrorism with San Bernardino. When they deleted the records out of the case that I worked on, I know they deleted them because I got the emails when the records were deleted in my email box. And then we find out that the same network of individuals and organizations that I was working on were involved in the San Bernardino attack. There's no other conclusion to come to, is there, that we could have prevented it? In cooperation with the FBI or other federal law enforcement, it's plausible that we could have prevented it. And if it isn't, then why do we even have Department of Homeland Security in the first place?
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. We'll continue our conversation with Philip Haney after this.
This is Dan Proft with 60 Seconds of Sanity for upstream-ideas.com. To paraphrase Lenin, in 2018 America, a socialist is a Democrat in a hurry. Just ask Hillary, who said when asked if labeling herself a capitalist hurt her in 2016. Probably. I mean, you know, it's hard to know, but if you're in the Iowa caucuses and 41% of Democrats are socialists, Hillary effectively conceded that Democrats are in a hurry to exile her and embrace Comrade Bernie's guarantee of a federal paycheck in every mailbox and a Tesla in every garage. Instead of being on defense over the personal chaos that follows Trump around like the cloud of dust that did Pigpen, Republicans should restrain themselves from spending like socialists and get on offense over Democrats' wholesale embrace of a gutter ideology whose main feature is a body count. The electorate that gave control of two-thirds of governor's mansions and state legislatures to Republicans, along with the House, Senate, and White House, is not on board with the Venezuelan model of shared misery and imposed orthodoxy of thought. Democrats may or may not be overplaying their hand on Trump, but they most certainly are on Karl Marx. Republicans would be wise to answer Hillary's distress call over May Day Democrats.
This is an Illinois Family Institute, IllinoisFamily.org update. A coalition of 38 pro-life organizations is warning that ratification of the Planned Parenthood-backed Equal Rights Amendment will provide a constitutional basis for unrestricted abortions and taxpayer-funded abortions nationwide.
It is pro-abortion legislation, and yeah, women do deserve better.
Ann Scheidler chairs Speak Out Illinois.
What we don't need particularly is anything that further exposes women to the temptation to have an abortion.
Call and tell your state representative to vote no on the Equal Rights Amendment. The state capitol switchboard number is 217-782-2000.
We are expecting our representatives to take a stand against it.
For lawmaker information, click Officials Finder on the IllinoisFamily.org homepage. Thanks again for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. Monty Larrick here with Philip Haney, former Department of Homeland Security officer, whistleblower, according to Congress, and he's with the group called Save the Persecuted Christians. Phil, a lot of discussion about what went wrong in Florida with a big school shooting there, the tragic school shooting there, and some people are pointing to maybe political ideology had some bearing on what occurred. Are there signs of that?
Well, we'll start with the FBI again. The failure to follow up on the calls from citizens on Cruz's behavior. Why? What caused that? Was it that they were understaffed? Possible. Or was it that they decided in their evaluation criteria that it wasn't worth following up? Possibly that. But I also know that as a former active duty law enforcement officer in DHS, that I saw, like the planting of a seed and it germinating, these seeds of, we'll call it political correctness, a progressive leftist ideology where essentially we saw the administration treat our enemies like our friends and our friends like our enemies. And this is a chicken and egg thing. But I do know that it comes from the top down, and that policies tend to filter down from the top. And that if the FBI had made an adamant policy that you will follow up to your utmost on these calls about concerns from citizens about violent trending behavior, that the FBI would have done it.
I just can't understand why they would not have done that. I just can't wrap my head around that.
I agree with you. I don't have a snappy answer for why, for example, the intelligence information that people like myself put into the database was removed. That's another whole step. First, you can just ignore information. That's kind of what FBI did in the Parkland case. At the very least, they ignored it. But go to the second level of actually pulling that information out of the law enforcement database is designed as an archive of derogatory information. That's a whole nother level. And then you go to the third level where they go after the person that put the information in the first place. Now, imagine how bad, much worse it would seem if the FBI, we would find out, or local law enforcement, had actually done the same thing and deleted the records of those calls. We don't have any evidence they did. Yeah. But what I'm trying to do is put it in perspective. What is their job? What is the FBI there for? What the Constitution says to prevent outbreaks of domestic violence at the state level. My agency was federal, looking out to prevent individuals from coming into the country. The FBI is domestic, yet federal, inside to apprehend and arrest and intervene in crimes that will hurt people in the social, you know, in the domestic arena. But we could work together, which is another problem, is the FBI and my agency don't have reciprocity. They're not able, literally, to communicate with one another. They can't both access the same system. So that's an obvious point of breakdown when you're talking about the terrorist attacks like at Boston and San Bernardino and Orlando. So where does this all begin? It starts here with a failure to define our sovereignty correctly. You will use all of your abilities and resources to defend our sovereignty and the people of our country from just these kind of attacks.
The people of our country are the kids in these public schools.
Including the kids. As we mentioned, you had to go through a metal detector. Any public building in D.C., you have to go through one. Many other kinds of places, including the airport. But somehow, we don't think that our schools are worth protecting. And, you know, we talked a lot about the gun-free zone. Maybe we should stop talking about gun-free zones. So where did that come from?
Well, I mean, let's back up about that. The teachers' union say teachers should not be armed in the public schools. I think a lot of the public thinks that same thing. What do you think?
I think that it's exactly like President Trump has been discussing in the public arena, that you're going to have 10 or 20 X minus percent of individuals or former law enforcement and or former military who are fully capable of wearing concealed carry. And if one of these kind of attacks, we already know from what we heard from Parkland that the teachers were doing their best to defend the students. They were blocking the door, locking the door, putting the kids behind them, exactly what any person would do if he really cares about those around him. Now imagine taking it one step further. What if one of those teachers that locked the door saw this cruise walk by him? He would have been able to intervene. Would he have guaranteed that he would have survived it? No. Let's stop being negligent about our national security and take the steps necessary to protect our resources, which includes, of course, our own children.
In the wake of the Parkland tragedy, there's been a lot of talk about the PROMISE program, which kind of had its roots in Chicago public schools, and in effect, it waters down arrest records. Is that a detriment to security, programs like the PROMISE program?
It can be. My own granddaughter was at a party and she got arrested for underage drinking. And they put her in, they call it a diversion program, to do community service, to write an essay, to get drug testing. And when she finished all those, they took it off her records because she's still a minor. So, yeah, there's room, flexibility. But what if my granddaughter did exactly the same thing, 3 or 5 or 10 times? How many times is she going to go through that generous program before they say, no more for you? Now we're going to have to intervene in your life and put you in a situation where you don't have the freedom that you did before because you're obviously not mature enough to handle it. So how many times did the social services and or local law enforcement go to his house, did we hear? A lot. So what is the threshold? 10, 15, 20?
Wow.
And see, we can't answer it because we don't have one. And that's part of the problem. The fact that it's so defined goes back to your question.
Well, let me ask you this. If I'm a parent and I got my kids in a school in Illinois, public school in Illinois, what should I be demanding from the authorities about protecting my kid in their school?
You secure the entrance and the exit of that school. At the very, very least, that somebody can't just literally walk right in with no ID. He essentially walked right in the front door. So where would that checkpoint be?
Yeah.
Would it be at every door in a school? No, it would be out, perhaps out further. It all depends on every situation. Some places are easier to secure than others. That was a big school. How many roads in and out are there? You know, you go through gated communities with the little gates that swing and you have a little pass. Sometimes you have an actual person in there who's there simply. If he knows you, they wave you through and you're on your way.
Should parents also be telling their school officials, we actually want armed public guards in those schools?
Well, not only tell them, but volunteer. In the general population, meaning the parents of the kids that are in the school, if the proportions are similar, 10 or 20%, then in a school like Parkland with a couple thousand students, that means you've got 200 or 300 individuals, guys like me. But if I was in a situation, I would literally go and tell them, I'll volunteer. I'll come and help you.
Well, let's turn our attention somewhere completely different. And maybe there's a link here. I don't know. Your work with Save the Persecuted Christians. It's kind of a new organization. What are you doing?
There are a lot of ministries and organizations that are already operating, like Open Doors and Voices of the Martyrs, that are helping in some part of the world persecuted Christians. But what we're going to try to do with this coalition is to unite the many flags under one banner and coordinate and work together as a team, if you will, to provide better or more, at least more, help to communities of persecuted Christians around the world. Persecution is very broad spectrum. There's persecution that is soft and passive, like you never get promoted in your job. Other non-Christian members of the country, they go, but you don't. You always stay in the lowest job, all the way to the very most severe, grotesque crucifixions and killings and the things that we've been hearing about lately.
And that persecution, in its really mildest form, I guess I would say, is happening right here in the U.S.
Yeah, the United States is not immune to it, especially with lately in the media, with the censoring, the apparently statements made by Christians or the belief held by people with a biblical worldview, if allowed to go unchecked, are going to be basically so intolerable that they're not even going to be allowed in social media. And we've seen examples.
Or if the Illinois Family Institute wants to put something out on Facebook about House Bill 40 and taxpayer-funded abortions,
right,
we might get screened out.
You might. And or you might be blocked or criticized or hindered in any number of these subtle political ways, because a lot of it is subtle. They use nuances and fine points in law to disqualify because they don't agree with your attitude, or try to imply that, like for example, 501c3s should not be allowed to have any form of a political opinion, when our own Constitution says that the Creator himself instituted government among men. So it doesn't make sense that that same government would then try to prevent people who recognize the Creator from participating in the government.
So if Christians don't act on these subtle attacks on their freedom, it could lead to bigger and worse things.
They say about freedom of speech, use it or lose it. And people need to understand what they believe, and that's why I keep talking about sovereignty. Because it's something, if you can grasp it, it's the most fundamental, much more fundamental even than the Constitution. What is it that we're fighting for? A lot of people can tell you what they're fighting against. Each group and each region around the country is fighting against something. But I have found in my travels that they can't necessarily define what they're fighting for. And so the whole conservative, faith-based community in the United States lacks a coherent, unified strategy, meaning a coherent, unified description of what they're fighting for versus what they're fighting against. And what we should all be fighting for and defending with our citizens' oath to do all that we can to protect our country from threat, both foreign and domestic, is our sovereignty, the right to choose a form of government that we would live under without having it being imposed on us through a non-ballot, a non-voting, a non-representative form of government.
Phil Haney, how can people connect with you?
I don't have a blog, so the only thing that's out there is things that you can look up on the web. And the book is on Amazon, but...
Book is?
See Something, Say Nothing. But maybe I'll take your suggestion and remedy that going on social media this year.
Thank you so much, Phil Haney, and God bless you.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us here on Illinois Family Spotlight.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.